RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So to the latest NZSIS threat environment report. This has been making a bit of news and a bit of comment here on RCR in the last few weeks. We thought we'd get Catherine Ennis-Carter, semi-regular contributor to RCR, management consultant specialising in governance, public admin, public sector reform and policy development, to give us her thoughts on this threat environment report. Catherine, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Sparking on all six.
Okay, good. I'm on eight.
Well done. Today.
In fact, I'm an aeroplane guy. I'm on 12. Here you go. Okay, so I want to read this paragraph before we start chatting from the foreword by Andrew Hampton, the Director General of Security, from this threat environment report, paragraph from the foreword. One of the most important steps anyone can take is to report threats when you see them. If you see something that doesn't feel right, I urge you to trust your instincts and let us know. Security is not something we can completely solve or perfect. It requires constant attention and for everyone to play a part. I would like to see an annual tradition established in organizations and communities around the country where this report is used as a starting point for a healthy conversation on keeping each other safe and secure. What do you think when you hear that, Catherine?
Well, you know, this report is another example of things that keep coming out of the public service. And I really wish that we would just get one report from one agency that you can't drive a bus through in terms of the quality and credibility of the analysis. New Zealanders do need to have confidence and trust in our public institutions. And this report is not reassuring in that respect. And this is particularly concerning because this is the NZSIS, this is our National Security Service. But once again, you know, we're seeing there's a lot of nudge in this report, and it seems like they're trying to frighten the public, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that little piece there, it's kind of, I get it, but it's like, dob them in.
Yes, well, we've seen this before, haven't we? But who is the audience for this report? I'm interested in that. If it's intended for the general public, it's a very poor piece of work. I mean, I'll just make a few points about
yeah, please.
This. Yeah, there's two or three major things that I'll come back to. One is the very Orwellian flip-flop on China in comparison to what the public were told by Helen Clark and John Key's governments about China's interests in New Zealand. We're all told that it was very benign, there was no cause for any concern. Now this report is laying out a situation where there obviously is major concern, and they're given various examples of political interference from China in various situations, in academia, pressuring community, the involvement of people getting involved in government and other organisations. But again, you know, I say Orwellian because when we were being told that there was no threat and China's interests in New Zealand were all benign, is not that long ago. And the report, I think, is trying to create an out for those governments by saying, oh, in the last 5 years, we've seen increasing evidence of this. But obviously what they're talking about has been going on for a very long time. So what accountability do Helen Clark, John Key, and Judith Collins have for misinforming the public during their terms in government? So that's one thing. The second thing is the inclusion of the concept of mis and disinformation, and we've talked about this a lot.
Yep.
And this is an entirely bogus concept, and I can't say this often enough or expressively enough, because the concept of mis and disinformation relies on the assumption that you have a body of truth or that you have a body of information that can be defined as truth, and everything else is mis or disinformation. You know, and that is an entirely bogus academic construct, and it's creeping into our language. Lots of ordinary people are using these terms now, mis and disinformation, without even really thinking about what it means. But the purpose of this concept and using these terms is to encourage groupthink. That's all it's about. That's what it's about. David Harvey on Fourth Estate a couple of weeks ago was talking about how we're seeing the marginalisation of alternative opinions. So,
yeah.
Again, within the context of this is our security agency, and we're seeing these bogus concepts coming in. So then in terms of the credibility of the report, if it's intended as a general advice to the New Zealand public to alert them to foreign interference and insider extremism, which seems to be the two main components of the report and what they're talking about and targeting, it's not very helpful. There's contradictory and conflicting statements all through it, unclear terms and descriptions. The narrative is quite muddled. There's often a lot of circumspect and innuendo type of commentary, which leaves you unclear about what the heck they're talking about. And generally a lack of evidence and statistics, particularly in relation to the insider extremism. So what they've done with this report is to provide a few examples and then say to the public, well, this is evidence of concern, and what you need to be doing is being vigilant, and particularly in relation to insider extremism. They're telling the public, you know, you have to watch out, watch what people are doing, be prepared for, I think they've got about 7 or 8 signs to watch out for, and they include things like behaviour change and getting involved with different ideologies, and whether there's evidence of somebody researching particular topics or preparing. And, of course, they're talking about preparing for violent incidents. But the credibility of the analysis bothers me perhaps more than the quality of the report itself, because it lacks logical consistency in identification of threats. Some conclusions are questionable and lack solid evidence. For example, they've said that when they talk about identity-motivated extremism or violent extremism, then they claim, I'm just looking for the reference, the page number, where it says that white supremacist ideology, white identity motivated violent extremism remains the dominant IMVE ideology in New Zealand. And then it says, other IMVE adherents in New Zealand express a range of views, which include anti-Semitism, anti-rainbow communities, and various anti-Maori, anti-Muslim, and anti-immigration outlooks. Well, what about other groups? I think, you know, we've got political examples of where both the Greens and Te Pāti Māori have made some very questionable statements from a security perspective.
And so have some of the trans community.
Well, you see, if you're going to only say that only the anti-rainbow communities are an example of identity-motivated violent extremism, what about the whole Posy Parker incident? You could say
exactly
that was evidence that when Kelly J. Keen Mitchell was coming to New Zealand, before she even got here, it was being positioned in the media and by MPs that she was a trans, an anti-transgender person, where she was more talking about women's rights. But that the whole opposition to that was positioned, it was marketed in the media, MPs made statements about it. So, and basically then we had a violent incident where two people were assaulted and both of them have got off in the court subsequently with a wet bus ticket kind of response. But that was an example where that group of pro-transgender activists did progress to violent extremist activities. But it's not identified in here.
These are narratives. That's how I describe it anyway. Narratives rather than a proper analysis of the threats. It's cherry-picked, isn't it?
It is. And there's evidence of nudge in this whole report and using innuendo to provide kind of circumspect accusations against non-specified communities and opinions. And it creates quite a confused narrative by mixing agendas with what is supposed to be critical analysis. And the examples that they've chosen, let me look if I can just find the other one that I can't go past. They talk about politically motivated violent extremism. So they're given these three categories of insider extremism in New Zealand: identity motivated, faith motivated, and they have given examples of the activities of ISIL and influencing people in New Zealand about that. But the politically motivated violent extremism is very concerning and disturbing, because they're talking about people whose motives and views are often highly personalised and lack an overarching ideological driver.
And then, well, how do they know that?
Well, exactly. And what does that even mean? And you've got other terms that are used without definition or explanation, like illiberal states. What are we talking about, illiberal states? Obviously, China, you know, they're using as an example of that. Russia is mentioned as well. But there's an awful lot of countries in the world that are, you know, that are outside the, what we might call as the used to be civilized West. And then there's a sentence here which, you know, is a reminder. It reminds me of what we've been talking about in the past in relation to disinformation and all the nonsense that was created by the Disinformation Project. And I can remember their claims that people who were opposed to the mRNA vaccines and, you know, was anti-vaccine stuff, they were saying that PMV adherents, now they say, have moved past their opposition to COVID-19 mandates and now focus on other domestic political issues where they seek to exploit polarising issues to further spread their beliefs. Well, what does that even mean?
Well, first of all, it's a free country. You can say what you like, is what I thought. And, you know, as long as you, that's all you do, and people can, you can sell the argument, or people say you're full of BS. So what?
Well, yes, exactly. But then they talk about mixed, unstable, and unclear ideologies.
Oh, like what would they be?
Well, what does that even mean? And what advice does that offer to the public if they want people to be vigilant about...
Well, that's why I go back to that paragraph I read.
Yes.
Because that's really what he's asking them to do, is to dob people in for what you're talking about. That's what I got from it.
Yes. And... you know, we can look at this and run a hypocrisy ruler over it.
Oh, please.
Because, you know, again, it comes back to political nudge that there are certain opinions which are outside the orthodoxy, and those opinions are mis and disinformation, and they're extremist. But what about the extremist ones associated with, for instance, you know, what happened with the whole transgender exercise with Posey Parker? What about the violent, threatening statements that have been made by some of Te Pāti Māori?
And the graphic with the guns?
Yes. So, you know, if you're going to identify only certain opinions or affiliations or communities of thought, don't we have to be concerned about what can happen when some of those other ideologies get out of control and are taking violent action?
Unless that's not your mission, and your mission is to promote a particular narrative, and that would indicate that the tentacles of what concerns us has got as far as the NZSIS. Here's another thing I'm reading from a RNZ story. Threats to New Zealand's national security are increasingly likely to come from within, as you've been saying, be it disgruntled government employees or those in desperate need of extra cash. Well, that's me probably most of the time. But I'm thinking of Barry Young when they say that. Disgruntled government employees. You know, the guy who leaked the COVID stats.
Yes, but there are quite a few other disgruntled government employees who are still in the public service, who obviously are opposed to what the current government, some of the activities and actions of the current government.
Yeah, but are they watching them? Are they watching them, or is that okay?
Yes, but you see, what we're seeing is because a lot of the people who are still in the public service are obviously very attached to the previous Labor government. So we're starting to see, I'm starting to hear constantly on TVNZ this report was leaked to TVNZ, that report was leaked. So information against the current government is coming out of the public service and going to the media. Well, is that a threat? Is that a security threat? It might be.
Not mentioned there.
No, not mentioned here. And they give an example in this report of somebody who works in the New Zealand government who they say unwittingly signed into a contract to provide information, New Zealand government information, to a foreign entity. So, you know, this is part of the espionage foreign interference examples. But really, when you look at that, I do not believe that somebody working for the New Zealand government can be so dumb that they unwittingly end up giving information to a foreign country. I mean, what the example that they give is that this person obtained a contract and signed it through some LinkedIn. It appeared to be a professional recruitment situation. This person must have been offered some kind of consultancy or whatever, contracting arrangement. But, you know, it gets back to my original point about the quality of the public service in New Zealand. I can't imagine, you know, anybody, when I was a public service employee, I can't imagine anybody actually being dumb enough to end up in that situation. So I actually don't believe unwittingly. I think the person concerned has probably used that defence, but I just don't believe it. And I also don't believe that white identity supremacism is the primary threat that we face. I think there's other ideologies like Māori grievance, you know, that's becoming violent, like the transgender stuff that we've seen become violent. You know, there are other examples. I don't believe really that there are that many, you know, crazy Nazis and white supremacists in New Zealand.
I agree.
Creating, you know, major internal extremist threats. I mean, one of the things that comes with a lot of immigration, of course, is, you know, that people are bringing their cultural, political and religious expectations with them. And one of the things that's concerned me for some time, particularly having worked in governments or in many other countries, is that New Zealand retains people who are only permanent residents, not New Zealand citizens. They can, you can work in the New Zealand public service if you're a permanent resident. And I think, you know, that people should be citizens. They should be committed to New Zealand as citizens if they're going to be part of our public service and being in a position to provide advice to or exercise some authority over New Zealanders. And then when I talk about conflicting and contradictory information, we've got this on page 37. The NZSIS can never investigate someone for exercising their right to freedom of expression and to espouse what may be fringe or radical ideas. If the same person was justifying the use of violence to advance those ideas, it would tip over the threshold for us to open a national security investigation. The NZSIS role will never be to police ideas, thoughts, or misinformation. Our democratic society entitles people to hold whatever views they like. We become concerned when extremists start taking steps towards committing violence. Well, that's fair enough when people's views escalate to violence, but...
Yeah, we don't want that.
But some of what they're targeting in this report clearly goes well beyond that. So they're not just looking at... you know, actual threats of violence. They're looking at what precedes it, and they're looking at, and they are looking at people's opinions and ideas. And the whole, you know, kind of official narrative is all through that. If and blatantly, you have to reach the conclusion that they think that anybody, and they're trying to tell the public that anybody who is outside that set of orthodox views, or as we call it, the official narrative, is potentially a suspect extremist.
Yeah, and dob them in.
Yes.
if they're in your community group or the golf club and he starts nutting off about something, dob him in. Let us know.
Yes.
So that's... It's not them to make that... It's not for them to make that judgment, is it?
Well, they are making a judgment, and it's inherent in the report. I mean, that whole sentence that I read out to you about a COVID-19 opponents are now morphing into
moving on.
As if they're all
liable to do that. I mean, yeah. Actually, you know who you're talking about, Andrew? You're talking about me.
Well, I'm talking about me as well.
Yeah, I'm not happy, Andrew.
No, I'm not happy either. But I wish that if they're going to try and offer advice to the public or put out a credible report, I just wish, you know, I really despair about what's coming out of the public service in terms of quality. And as I say, you know, you could drive a bus through this thing in terms of credibility.
Are we to assume, Catherine, then, given all that, that they're actually spying on people like you and me?
I haven't discovered whether my phone's being bugged yet.
Well, I guess all they got to do is listen into RCR every damn morning if they want to know what I think.
Well, quite right. But at the same time, they're telling us we're allowed to have those ideas and those opinions.
Yeah.
And yet
isn't
that
cognitive dissonance? Isn't that the definition of it?
Well, you know, there's been so much of this that's been thrown at us over the last few years, and you know, you've heard the phrase 180. You know, sometimes it's really difficult for us to deal with, because what we're being told black and white, and we're being told that we're a threat because we're purveyors of misinformation and disinformation. But most of the misinformation is coming out of the official agencies.
They wouldn't have used those words a few years ago, would they?
No, and I have to say that I think, you know, the lack of quality and credibility of the analysis that's going into these reports is indicative of what's been happening over the last few years. And the conclusion really is that we have government by slogans, sound bites, and rhetoric. And it's being supported by dubious academic constructs, which I would call academic piffle, and very selective narrative. And so the general public is left to run our own hypocrisy ruler over these things and draw our own conclusions. You know, if we can see hypocrisy and contradictions in the analysis, then a lot of people who are presumably educated enough to be working in government should be able to see it as well. And so potentially, you know, this report could have a backfire result if the purpose of releasing this report was A, to try and educate the public, and B, to shore up the reputation of the NZSIS that they're looking after us.
They're keeping us safe. They're keeping us safe,
well,
Catherine.
It always gets back to this, you know, the loss, the increase in surveillance, the loss of freedoms and rights that we're all expected to accept for this undefined concept of safety that's being thrust at us all the time.
Another weaponized word. And maybe a good one to end on. Catherine Ennis-Carter, always good to hear what you're thinking. Thanks for coming on this morning.
My pleasure, Paul. Always good to talk to you.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.